Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm George Guntas. You love The Daily Show for its incisive political commentary, but did you know that our offices are filled with super soccer fans? I'm the lighting designer here at The Daily Show, and the only thing that I love more than our studio lights are the lights of a soccer stadium. I'm joined by Daily Show writer and superfan Joe Opio. The World Cup is underway, and we thought we'd drop a bonus podcast episode breaking down the round of 16 and giving you our predictions for the quarterfinals. We'll begin with a disappointing performance of the United States versus the Netherlands. The Dutch make easy work of the Americans with a 3-1 victory. What are your takeaways from the game, Joe?
First of all, George, it's a pleasure, as always, to join you and break down the games of the World Cup as it goes on. My takeaway from the US game, first of all, I thought the US was killed mainly by primary schoolboy errors in defense. They were killed by cutbacks from the Dutch. Normally, you would think that a team at that level would know that when a ball goes on the side, there are two chances. Either, you know, the attacker is going to smash it right across goal, or they're going to cut it back. And the US took the first option. They always went to defend the ball right across the face of goal, but then they forgot the trailing runners, and they ended up paying twice for their mistakes. The first goal, it was Tyler Adams who failed to track Memphis Depay, because Memphis Depay started the move, but then ran right past Tyler Adams. Tyler Adams has been America's best player by far. But I think in that moment, he was caught napping. I think one of the central defenders should have stepped out maybe to help him and make Memphis Depay a bit more uncomfortable. But that was goal number one. Goal number two, again, another ball to Denzel Dumfries. Again, another cutback. And this time it was another of US's more talented players, Serginho Dest, who was caught napping by Dale Blind. The last goal, I think the US was already beaten by that point. They had scored a very fortuitous first goal, but I think by that time the US had given up the game. And I thought, again, it was more schoolboy errors in defense, because when the cross came in from Dale Blind, the Americans all came into the middle. And I think Jedi Robinson is to blame. He came and squished into the middle. He never checked his side mirrors to see who was standing behind him. Again, Denzel Dumfries in acres of space. Any professional player will put that chance away. So for me, that was very disappointing, because the US conceded goals from schoolboy errors. My other takeaway was how reactive Greg Berhalter was, because I thought, and we talked about this in our last podcast, Gio Reyna should have started the game, especially because America lacks a striker. So they could have played Gio maybe as a false nine, or they could have sorted Tim Weah into the number nine position and then let Gio Reyna play as a number 10, but they didn't bring him on till they were already 2-0 down. For me, that's very, very reactive from the manager. I feel like the coach should always take initiative. You try to take the initiative, try to force your opponent into playing, not instead of you reacting to the way they play. And I think Louis van Gaal actually talked about it in his post-match press conference. He said the US failed to adapt. And when Greg Berhalter tried to adapt, it was way too late. So for me, again, I'm going to go back to what I harped on about in the last podcast, I think Greg must go. I think he shouldn't be trusted with this golden generation of American players. I think the US is going to be looking at making a deeper run in the 2026 World Cup. I think the US has the tools and the resources to make a deeper run, but they need a far more brilliant manager. They need a far more proactive manager. And I think Greg is way too reactive and way too conservative for his own good.
I have to agree with you on that. I mean, starting with Van Gaal, comparatively to Berhalter, Van Gaal, a guy coached Ajax, Barcelona,
Bayern Munich, tons of experience.
Bayern Munich, Manchester United, the biggest clubs in the world.
He has basically, he has forgotten more soccer.
Yeah, for
Greg Berhalter knows.
Yeah, for sure. So now you sit there, and it was a simple game plan from Van Gaal. He knew that the U.S. would struggle to break them down. They allowed the U.S. to have possession. U.S. had 59% of the ball to the Netherlands, 41. They just sat patiently and waited for their moments. That was the first note that I agree with you on, is that Van Gaal definitely outcoached Berhalter. Again, completely agree about the being reactive. I mean, we waited till almost stoppage time and down 3-1 to pull a defender and play three at the back and just throw caution to the wind. In general, I feel like I wanted a more desperate performance once you went down from the Americans. And it just seemed like there was a couple minute spell where when they kind of scored the fortunate goal, there was another moment where someone rounded the keeper and probably should have done better. But yeah, for sure, that lack of desperation. And then
it was, I think it was Hadji right again. It was a loose ball.
Yeah.
Loose ball from Memphis Depay.
That's
and he rounded the keeper. And he tried his best. But his first touch took him
too far away.
And basically, you know, lost him the angle. But you're right. Yes.
Yeah. And so again, to go in, and then another thing, just to kind of continue what you said, is that the defensive mistakes, obviously, you know, optional defending, but I think when you make one mistake, that can happen. When you make three mistakes, those kind of mistakes, I think that is a reflection of the manager. I think that that's also an inability to communicate. I think that a center back, if you're like playing on a team with, let's say, a Sergio Ramos or a more experienced center back, they're going to be yelling and directing and talking. I feel like it was like nobody was talking. And in the end, it's easy to blame the person who had that responsibility. But I think defending as a collective,
collaborative effort. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the final thing that I'll say, again, agree that the two main storylines from a U.S. perspective, obviously the defensive lapses. And the second is that the USA were wasteful in front of goal. And when you're an underdog in this regard, playing a better team,
you have to take your chances.
You have to take your chances.
Chance, yes.
Every chance. We all know this. The USA actually outshot the Dutch 17 to 11 with more shots on target, 8-6. The Dutch were clearly more clinical and deserved to win the game. But when you're playing, like we said, better side, you need to convert the opportunities. Had Pulisic converted that early chance, it changes
the game. It would have
the
changed
plan.
The complexion of the game, yeah. Yes. But also,
yeah.
And I think this, it's crazy to talk about the US and not shooting well,
or right.
not shooting effectively, yeah. given yeah. the gun violence problem in the country. But yeah, I think the US is desperate for a striker right. who can put the chances away. And I feel like they are lucky because they have such a striker, actually. Ricardo Pepi wasn't called up for the national team, but we can't go into the selections now. But I feel like Ricardo Pepi plays in the Dutch league. He has made a habit out of scoring against Dutch opposition. He should have been in the team. I think enough acres of ink have been wasted writing about Greg Berhalter's decision not to call him. But he's young, and I think he's going to be a great addition to this particular roster going into 2026.
Let's move on to Argentina versus Australia. Argentina beat Australia 2-1 to set up an interesting quarterfinal matchup with the Netherlands. Many expected this to be a walk in the park for Argentina, but it was anything but. A well-organized Australian side made Argentina work for the win.
I think the thing I took away from this is, again, Messi delivered, and I think Argentina are going to need him to deliver each and every game if they are going to have a chance. He has been delivering big, big, huge, huge decisive goals in every game. He scored against Saudi Arabia. Of course, they lost that game. It was a penalty, put it away. Then he scored the game that broke the Mexican resistance. And I feel like in this game as well, he scored the goal that broke the Australian resistance. Of course, this time he didn't have Di Maria. Di Maria, I think, had muscle overload. They don't need Di Maria clearly. When if you watch this game, you could see why Di Maria is so essential to this team. But Messi again delivering, that was critical. I feel like this game turned out to be a lot more tense and a lot more nervous than it should have been. We all expected Australia is a bit like the US in that the best Australians or the most athletic Australians don't normally go into football. They either go into Australian football or they go into rugby or they go into cricket. So football in Australia struggles in much the same way that football struggles in the US. It doesn't attract the best of the best. But I think the Australians acquitted themselves well. I think they put up a good resistance. When Messi scored, I thought that would really be the straw that broke them. But they kept coming back and then they scored, of course. They conceded a second goal, which was a gift from their goalkeeper. He was pressured, tried to split the two Argentinians. And you don't do that at that level. You're going to be punished if you make such a mistake. But they kept, you know, fighting back. They kept coming back. And then they scored, of course, off a deflection. And I feel like Argentina had it in them to stretch the game away. Lautaro Martinez, I don't know what's happening, but he's off form. His confidence is totally short. He has lost his starting position to Julian Alvarez. And you can see that that's affecting him. He had three great chances in this game. The first one, he should have put away. It was a simple curler into the side netting, but then he ended up skying it and sending it into the stands. The second chance, it wasn't him who should have taken it. He should have just backheeled the ball. They played a great ball into him, and then Montiel was running behind him. He should have just backheeled the ball into Montiel. It would have been one-on-one with an empty net. He didn't do that because, again, the desperation. And when your confidence is short, you're always snatching at chances. He snatched at that. Third chance, Messi played him in. Again, he just shot straight at the goalkeeper. A player of Lautaro's experience and pedigree, and we've seen him light up the Champions League time and again. You should have expected him to at least put one of those chances away and put the game beyond Australia, but he didn't. And as you could see at the end, they almost paid for it.
Absolutely.
There was a messy run by Aziz Behic, which he should have put away, but again,
of course,
great defending from Alessandro Martinez. I think Argentina should be playing a back three, because you need the three central defenders covering for each other. If Lisandro wasn't in, that was a definite goal. And then, of course, Australia had a chance at the very end of the day.
And Tagliafugo falls down, yeah.
Yeah, a great save by Emiliano Martinez. But this game, again, Argentina made such heavy work.
Yeah.
When it should have been a walkover. The only two positives I feel that Argentina should take away from this game, actually three, is one, Di Maria wasn't in and they still managed to win. Two, Messi is still delivering. And then three, and most importantly, this was the first game this entire World Cup when I felt that Rodrigo de Paul was almost back to his very best.
Sure.
This is the Rodrigo de Paul that we all know and love. This is the Rodrigo de Paul that earned himself a transfer from Udinese to Atletico Madrid. This is the Rodrigo de Paul that helped Argentina win the Copa America. And I feel like you could see that in the way he pressed the Australian goalkeeper to create that chance for Julian Alvarez.
For sure, for sure. Before I get into my thoughts about Argentina, I just want to take my hats off to Australia. They were fantastic. This was the type of performance you were hoping from the Americans. As
yes.
underdogs, you were hoping for some intensity,
defiant, yes.
Intensity, intense, physicality, belief. And again, I think that, like you said, comes down to the manager. So now back to Argentina. Like you said, what a performance from your boy Leo Messi. I feel like in stoppage time, like you said, Argentina could have scored probably four goals in stoppage time before that final chance for Australia. And again, to kind of jump on your criticism of Lautaro Martinez, is Lautaro Martinez Gonzalo Higuain all of a sudden? Jesus. I mean, is he going to lose the tournament for Argentina if they get into a spot where they need him to put one away? You're right. His confidence is in the gutter.
Totally gone, yeah.
Yeah. And again, to your point about Di Maria, I agree. And I think the coach agrees, because soon after halftime, they made an interesting substitution when they pulled Papu Gomez, an attacking midfielder, to bring on Lisandro and play three at the back. And that's kind of really when Argentina became more fluid. And I think, I think that going forward, that's something that they will turn to.
I feel, frankly, that when you look at this Argentina team,
yeah,
they are facing the same issue. They should use the same formula they use at the Copa America, and that's you can't afford to concede. So if they can keep it nil-nil, they can always count on a moment of magic from Messi, but they also can't afford to concede because I don't think they have the character to come back. I don't think they have the force of will to come back. So the best hope for me is to always keep it tight at the back. The only good thing I could say in their favor is they have conceded 3 goals, and all 3 goals have been absolute stunners.
Yeah.
In a way that they were unavoidable. So the 2 goals that Saudi Arabia put away, there's nothing Emiliano Martinez could have done about that.
For sure.
They were both like beautiful, brilliant goals. And then against Australia, it was a stunner in a sense that it deflected and went.
Yeah, it was not even close to being on target before.
Yeah, not close, but the way it deflected and went into the side netting, there's nothing he could do about it. So they haven't yet conceded a goal that you would go like, oh, that was a mistake. Oh, the other team outplayed them in that way. And I feel like that's good if you're playing in a tournament, because tournament football is all about keeping it tight at the back and then picking your moments when you go forward.
Agreed. And then one more thing for our American fans that are new to watching the World Cup at this moment. One thing that happened in this game that is a technical term that we like to call squeaky bum time, when you're up 2-1 late and your team is giving you a chance, and you're on the edge of your seat. This game for stoppage time, we were complete squeaky bum time for the Australian fans, but they got through it. Argentina meets the Netherlands in the quarterfinal. Who you have gone through?
That's going to be a tight one, but I think Argentina will have too much for the Dutch eventually. I think the Dutch benefited a lot from America's naivety. I don't think Argentina will be as naive in attack. I don't think Argentina will be as generous in defense as the Americans were. And I think the Dutch also struggle. They scored 3 goals against America, but that's, as we saw, as we've said before, that was because America was too charitable in defense. I don't think they'll get as many chances against Argentina, and I don't think they have the kind of defensive midfielder or the kind of defensive discipline that can keep Leo Messi under the cosh for 90 minutes. So I think Argentina will have too much for them at the end of the day. I think Argentina is slowly growing into the tournament. I think Messi and Julian Alvarez, like you can see their chemistry is beginning to build. Di Maria will probably be back for this game. And I feel like the Dutch, their experience was war horses, let's say that. Like their coach, from the coach, all through their defense, Van Dijk, the midfield. These are players who play the biggest games week in, week out in Europe. But I think Messi's brilliance will be a bit too much for them. And also, like, you have to remember that on the left side of the Dutch, that's where Dele Blind plays. And I think he's too slow.
Agreed.
I actually think Dele Blind against Messi and Di Maria is a war crime waiting to happen.
Yeah,
so unless he gets some kind of support from his wingers, I think he's going to be exposed. And if I were Lionel Scaroni, I would specifically target Dele Blind because I think he's the key weakness in that Dutch defense.
Agreed. I have Argentina going through as well. What I hope is that as you get further into the tournament, that they don't tend to go conservative and in fear of not making a mistake. And I hope that they really go for it, because I think that they will outclass the Netherlands. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
So let's move on to France versus Poland. France beat Poland 3-1 in a pretty straightforward match. A second half brace from Kylian Mbappe leads the French into the quarterfinals.
I feel like the Polish will not be proud of themselves. They didn't really turn up for that game. They have one of the best strikers in the world at the moment, Robert Lewandowski. I don't think they fed him enough. I think he was starved of service. France, on the other hand, what can we say about France that we haven't said already? Them and Brazil are the favorites to win this particular World Cup. I think the final, most likely, barring any upsets, will be a repeat of 1998. It will be France versus Brazil. Kylian Mbappe. Yeah. Oh, man. We are running out of compliments in this particular World Cup. He's already scored so many goals and he's just 24. Yeah. And I think the goals he scored against Poland were particularly brilliant in their quality. The first one, he gave the keeper the eyes. The keeper thought he was going to go, you know, to the far post.
Far post,
to the near. Yeah. And then the second one, he's playing, he's like brimming with confidence, and you need a player like that. But I feel like the Poles made a mistake, because if you're playing a team that has Mbappe on its wings, I think the only thing you have to do is concentrate on him, because the first goal was scored by Olivier Giroud, but I think France doesn't offer as much going through the middle. I think their only creative outlet is to go through Mbappe. So if you crowd the wings and force them to go through the middle, it's almost like the only way to nullify France is to do the opposite of what coaches used to do when it came to Barcelona. So when Barcelona was so good, when Xavi and Iniesta used to play and Messi, and they would all go through the middle, what would coaches do? They would flood the middle and force Barcelona to play through the wings, because then Barcelona was forced to swing in crosses, and Barcelona was absolutely impotent when it came to balls in the air. So I feel with France, because France is so devastating on the wings with Dembele on one wing and Kylian Mbappe on the other, I think coaches should be doing the opposite. They should be flooding bodies in the channels and force France to go through the middle. I don't think France has enough creativity in the middle to actually damage any defense, because they play Tchouaméni and they also play Adrian Rabiot. Rabiot lacks the creative nous to unlock a defense, and so does Tchouaméni. They can pass the ball, but they're always going to go through the wings. So flood the wings, force them through the middle, and I think you'll be able to nullify France's threat.
Yeah, for sure. I think that the way that France could get around that they've done historically is to, I think Giroud needs to drop centrally deeper, hold up the ball, and then play off to the wings. They've had a lot of success in that regard. But as I mentioned, Giroud, it doesn't seem like France is missing Karim Benzema.
No, they're not. And I feel like one player we're not talking about, and that's the beauty of France. They've got such strength in depth that they could easily switch out a player for another and you don't almost see a drop in quality, which is something that most other teams can't say. And so another player I haven't been talking about is Antoine Griezmann. He hasn't been scoring goals, so he hasn't been getting any headlines, but I feel like his work rate and the way he helps link up the midfield with the attack has been absolutely important to France. I think he was the reason they scored the second goal that actually helped them get some kind of breathing room between themselves and the Poles. And I think he was back defending, because the counter-attack actually started from a ball that he cleared. Giroud brought it down, played in Mbappe, 2-0, game over. And I think because he hasn't been getting the goals, he hasn't been getting onto the score sheet, it's very, very easy and very tempting to overlook the amount of work and the amount of a link-up play. He's basically the glue in that French squad. And I think if you can just flood the wings, then the only other option France has is to go through Antoine Griezmann. But then he's doing so much work off the ball that I doubt he would be as effective in the final third.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And then one last thing about this game before we move on is a pet peeve of mine that's been a trend lately, both in club and international football, is this stutter step Jorginho style penalty. Please stop, everybody. Goalkeepers, stand on your line and do not move while they stutter step and generate a penalty with zero power. Stand and wait. It is so frustrating to watch these penalties.
I feel like a friend of... I feel like it's a trend, as you said, and it was started by Jorginho. But I feel like what's happening right now is players are betting on the goalkeeper going down fast.
For sure.
Before they even hit the ball.
Yeah.
But then if the keeper doesn't do that, if the keeper decides this is going to be a staring contest,
right,
then one of you is going to break. And normally, because you don't have much of a run up, and so you don't have that momentum before you strike the ball, your penalty is going to be saved because it's going to be a slow grounder.
Right.
We talked about Messi last week, and rather in our last podcast, and we said he's not a great penalty taker. We talked about Neymar as well. But I think they are not isolated cases. I think, and that's the takeaway for me, that's the main takeaway from this round of 16. I think bad penalties are an epidemic in football right now. It used to be that in a penalty shootout, one or maybe two people would miss. But now you had Spain, three people missing, three people missing their opening penalties. Yesterday, Japan, horrible, horrible penalties. All of them very, very savable. Yeah. And so I think we talked about Messi and Neymar last week, but this is an epidemic. And maybe we should be talking to a Dr. Fauci to come help us sort it out.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. For sure. Let's move on to England versus Senegal. Gareth Southgate starts Phil Foden and he rewards him with two assists. And Jude Bellingham puts in a man of the match performance as England cruise past Senegal 3-0, setting up a mouthwatering quarterfinal versus France.
England had been crying out for Phil Foden. We talked about this in my in the last podcast. I was crying out for Phil Foden. I feel a talent like him should always be on the pitch. And kudos to Southgate for starting him, because otherwise, apart from Phil Foden, that was a very, very conservative lineup. When I saw it and I saw he was starting both Declan Rice and Henderson, and on top of that, he was also starting Jude Bellingham. I couldn't believe it. I thought, wait, is England facing Senegal or are they facing Barcelona? Prime Barcelona. That's how conservative that lineup was. But he redeemed himself by starting Phil Foden, and I think it paid off. I feel like Senegal, much like the US, was very generous. They were let down by both their defense and their midfield. I don't think England would have gotten the goals they got against Senegal if they were playing against more experienced and more streetwise or street smart opposition. Look at the first goal. They basically let Henderson run untracked into their six-yard box, the Senegalese. It was very disappointing as an African, because I went like, oh, where's the defensive discipline? You can't have a midfielder running untracked from the midfield into your six-yard box. The second goal was even more disappointing because it was towards halftime, 44th minute. You're hoping and praying, let's take it back into the dressing room when it's 1-0. Then we can strategize and come up with a game plan. And then at that point, Jude Bellingham got the ball and they let him run through their midfield. They had two opportunities to commit tactical fouls to bring him down so that they could reorganize. They passed up both opportunities. I don't think a South American team or a more streetwise European team would have let Jude Bellingham get away with that. They would have, Sergio Ramos would have, but Casemiro would have put him on the deck immediately. Yeah. But the Senegalese showed their, I think, tournament inexperience in that particular moment. And now you're going into halftime, you're 2-0 down, game over. Third goal as well, again, a bit like the US, defensive naivety, because the ball comes in from the side and Bukayo Saka waited for, I think, an edge. It felt like centuries in that box. And the left back was off doing God knows what. Again, there's no way you're making that mistake at this level and you're not getting punished. And I feel like the Senegalese let themselves down. I feel like they missed having a player like Sadio Mane in the team. I feel like their defense, which is being marshaled by two very experienced players, you have Mendy in goal and Koulibaly at the heart of that defense. I think they should have done better. Again, you said defending is very collaborative. I think they should have screamed and yelled and talked a bit more. They paid the price. And for me, it was very disappointing as an African. I guess the same way Americans were disappointed by the US. I feel like if you're going to go out at this stage, it's better if you go out because the other team was too brilliant, as opposed to you going out because you're either indisciplined in defense or naive or otherwise through some kind of mistake.
Oh, for sure. Obviously, Senegal missed Sadio Mane. I think the world, all the fans in the world missed such a wonderful player. But again, England were dominant. Like you touched on a lot of the points. A thing that really stood out to me was Harry Kane and how Harry Kane is, I think, one of the two unique strikers in the world. I think
he's being Benzema.
Correct. Yeah. He is the only other player that you could call a 9.5 who drops so deep to facilitate and influences a game so much when he's not scoring goals. The only difference between, I think, Harry Kane and Benzema is when Benzema starts to move deep and plays Vinny through, he somehow magically arrives in the box to also finish the move as well. Where here, obviously, Henderson comes in, like you said, unmarked, but the awareness to say, hey, my number nine is at half field. Let me occupy the center channel to give Bellingham an option to cut it back. Brilliant. Brilliant from Henderson in that regard. I also, again, Jude Bellingham. Wow, man, this guy is the total package.
He has announced himself at the big stage, but I think if you're a player who watches European football, if you're a fan who watches European football, you're not surprised. He has been the standout player at Borussia Dortmund for, I think, the last two seasons. He's a classic box-to-box player. He's so strong, he's so fast, and he's so physically gifted that he can muscle his way from midfield to the attack. I feel like if you're English, another great piece of news from this game is that Harry Kane eventually, finally, got onto the score sheet. Like, he got into the score sheet, and England needed Harry Kane somehow rediscovering his scoring boots if they were to have a chance going further into the tournament.
Agreed.
You can't just have Harry Kane assisting and facilitating. Mm. That's not his job description. His job description is put the ball in the net, and I feel like that goal, because sometimes if you're a striker and you're struggling for goals, sometimes that one goal can just reopen the floodgates for you.
Absolutely. So now it's England-France in the quarterfinal. It's going to be box office. Who do you have going through?
I think I have France going through, but I think this game is ironically particularly suited to Gareth Southgate's conservatism. I feel like Gareth Southgate always goes negative regardless of the opposition. But I think, like, for once, if he decides to employ negative tactics to counter the threat of France, everyone in England will understand. So I think this game, France will win, because France, I feel, has got way too many weapons to hurt England. And England doesn't have the same amount of offensive weapons. I feel France has also the defensive weapons to actually neutralize England's attack, and England doesn't have the same the other side. But I feel like this game, if there's a game that was almost tailor-made for Gareth Southgate and his negativity, Gareth Southgate and his conservative tactics, I think it's this particular quarterfinal.
Oh, for sure. I agreed. Great matchup. I do have France going through as well. But you never know what ends up happening in these games. I feel like it's going to be nervy. I think it's going to be like one of those Champions League final games where people are going to be hesitant to take chances. And I feel like it's going to take a little time. People are going to take a little time to get out of their shell. And then, you know, all it takes is one mistake and everything changes. So again, going with France, but I think it's going to be a great game.
It's going to be a mouth-watering battle, an intriguing mouth-watering battle between Kylian Mbappe and Kyle Walker, because both of them are like super, super pacey.
Yeah.
Both of them are probably some of the fastest players we have playing the game today. And it's going to be an intriguing titanic battle between the two of them.
Let's move on to Croatia versus Japan. After beating Germany and Spain in the group stage, Japan fall to Croatia on penalties. After falling behind 1-0, an experienced Croatia side get themselves back in the match and force penalties, where they come out victorious.
I felt bad for Japan. I feel like they have put together a run in this particular tournament that deserved maybe a bit more reward, maybe another round. Because remember, they beat Spain and they beat Germany. And they qualified as top of a group that had Spain and Germany in it. This was the group of death. They were not supposed to make it out of this group. They did. And then they ran into a Croatian side that is experienced at this level. They've been there, done that. They have so many old war horses, Modric, Brozovic. These players have been there, done that. And you could see it when they went 1-0 down. They didn't panic. Ivan Perisic, they knew that they could bounce back. And remember the last World Cup, Croatia kept advancing simply by winning their penalty shootouts.
Right.
Now, they lost one of their best penalty takers back then. the former Barcelona midfielder
Rakitic.
Ivan Rakitic. He was always their last penalty taker, their best penalty taker. They lost him from that World Cup, but they're still as experienced and they still know what it takes. And guess what? Now they have a goalkeeper who stops penalties for fun. I felt like the Japanese penalties were all terrible. Again, the thing you've said, they try to hope and pray that the keeper goes the wrong way. You should pick your spot and you should put the ball in the spot regardless of where the keeper goes. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend of mine and I was asking him, why don't players try to put the ball in the roof? And he said, oh, because there's always
the risk
that you might actually sky it and it goes over the crossbar. And I was of the opinion that I would rather my penalty goes over the crossbar than it be saved by the goalkeeper. Because when you try to go high, a keeper has no chance of saving your penalty because no keeper dives going up. And I remember one of my favorite players, one of my favorite strikers and favorite penalty takers, Alan Shearer, always used to go high. And he never missed a penalty, I think, his entire career. Or maybe he missed one or two. But he had a consistent record of always, always putting the ball in the net. And when you look at the Japanese penalties, all of them were on the ground. All of them easily, easily saved.
Right.
And it was heartbreaking because I feel like Japan deserved a lot more, not solely because they played such great football, but also because they have the best fans at any World Cup.
I agree. I think that the other thing that I don't know what it is, it's always a pressure, one of the most pressure you can feel as a professional athlete in any sport. It seems like it's easy, but it's all mental, taking a penalty. I don't know what
it's a simple psychological battle between you and the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And the goalkeeper is under absolutely no pressure.
Right.
Because the goalkeeper can concede all five and everyone will understand.
Right.
So the pressure is always on the kicker and the goalie just needs to save one or two.
Right.
And then they become the hero.
Yeah. And it's like I have this thing where I look at the face of the taker as they're lining up and I predict if they're going to make it or miss it. And I'm right more than I'm wrong. You see a guy like Cristiano Ronaldo take a deep breath and you're like, this guy is automatic. And he is. And then you see the look on some of these. And again, some of these guys are kids. I mean, they're like 20 years old, 22 years old. Like,
it's a huge responsibility.
With the weight of a country on them.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge responsibility.
England in the Euros, prime example. And you can just say, like, I would rather have a person, my least skilled players take the penalties who want to take the penalty than my more skilled players who are afraid of the moment.
Some people would say the players are not chosen at random. You know, they practice the penalties.
Right.
And going by the results at the training ground, then the coach decides who his prime penalty takers will be. But, George, as we always said, I think we've talked about this before in the hallways of the Daily Show, it's very, very hard to simulate the pressure and atmosphere in a live game when you're on the training ground. Because when you're on the training ground, you don't have fans booing and chanting. You don't have that lonely walk, that lonely, very, very lonely walk from the center line all the way to the box. So the conditions, the lab conditions at the training ground are far, far removed from the real life conditions on the pitch. So even when the coaches go like, okay, this is the player who converted the most penalties when we practiced our penalty kicks on the training ground, it feels like the penalty kicks on the training ground are in a more controlled environment and so are not a reflection of the pressure you're going to be under, the pressure cooker that's actually taking a penalty in a real game.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Let's move on to see who Croatia will face in the quarterfinal matchup. Brazil put on a show and they dominate South Korea 4-1, setting up the quarterfinal match with Croatia. Can Brazil be stopped?
I have to begin by saying I felt bad for South Korea. I felt like they had the misfortune, the terrible, terrible misfortune of running into this Brazilian team. No one wanted to run into this Brazilian team so early. If South Korea had somehow avoided Brazil, they probably might have made it into the next round, because then they would have been facing Switzerland. That's a far better prospect than facing Brazil. I think Brazil is a hard team to stop. I think we've talked about Brazil being the favorites in the last podcast, and I think I'll reiterate the same message in this podcast. Brazil are without a doubt everyone's favorites. It's such a solid team at the back, and yet they are also very devastating on the wings, and they have the creativity of Neymar in the middle of the park, and then they have Richarlison, who is converting, and he converts at a far more efficient rate for his national team than he does for his club, Tottenham Hotspur. So I think they're very unstoppable. And of course, if you manage to go past Casemiro and you manage to go somehow past Thiago Silva in defense and Marquinhos, then you have to deal with the wall that's Alisson.
That's darker, yeah.
And Brazil has such strength in depth that even their second best goalkeeper, their second option as a goalkeeper, could be starting for most of the other teams in the tournament. Yeah. So without a doubt, Brazil, and you can see that they're in their groove now. They're having fun. They're dancing. I've had some people say it's disrespectful, but I don't think it is, because I think when you score a goal, then you've earned the right to celebrate any way you want. If people don't want you to celebrate, then they should be stopping you from scoring the goal. And I also feel like maybe there's a bit of a cultural misunderstanding. Some people see Brazilian players dancing and they think it's disrespectful, especially like, I think, pandits from the West. But Brazilians, that's who they are. You know, they dance, they jiggle, they have fun. You know, they call them the Samba Boys, because that's who they are. For them, soccer is not so much a game as it is a lifestyle. You know, we talk about Yoga Bonito. They're having fun, and that's a very, very dangerous Brazil. Every time you see Brazil having this kind of fun, that means they mean business. The last time I saw Brazil having this kind of fun was in 2002, when they had the famous three R's, you know, Ronaldo, Rivaldo, Ronaldinho. And you remember, they were dancing and they ended up winning the tournament. So for me, I think they're the team to beat. And I think good luck to Croatia trying to stop this team. But yeah, of course, Croatia, as I said, you know, Croatia experienced, they've been there, done that. They might just have the tools or the tournament know-how to pose a threat, or to pose at least a big enough roadblock for Brazil. But this Brazilian team, man, I see them going all the way. And remember, I'm a guy who wants Messi to win it, but Messi needs to go past this Brazilian team somehow.
My one last question about this game is, other than Brazilian manager Tite, who had the best goal dance celebration?
You rarely see, the thing about Tite dancing with his players, and again, I'm going to harp on about how much fun the Brazilians are having. Yeah. You rarely see coaches do that. So the players will go dance and all that, and then the coach will remain extremely professional and very buttoned up, and we go like, oh no, the job is not yet done. We can't be having fun yet. But you could see when they ran to him that even he is going like, yes, I'm bought into this. I feel like we're here to have fun. So which means the pressure is off both tactically and on the pitch. And that makes, you don't want to face an opponent, because at this level in the World Cup, the nerves are always jangling. At this level in the World Cup, every match becomes a pressure cooker. So if you see your opponent having fun and enjoying themselves, then you just know you're in trouble. I liked Lucas Paqueta's dance.
Yeah,
because you know, Paqueta, it was good to see. Yeah, it was good to see a white boy with rhythm. He's Brazilian. White, but also you have to remember he's Brazilian. So it was fun to see him having some rhythm.
I think we can both agree that we have Brazil going through as our picks for the quarterfinal, yeah?
Yes, I think it's going to be a Brazil-Argentina semifinal, which is a repeat of the Copa America, and that is going to be extremely exciting for every football fan, not just in South America, but all over the world.
Moving on to Spain versus Morocco, an organized Moroccan side holds Spain to a 0-0 draw. It goes to penalties where Spain failed to convert a single penalty. Morocco are through the quarterfinals.
Disappointing for Luis Enrique, disappointing for Spain. They thought they could, they hoped they would make a deeper run. But they ran into the informed team for me of the tournament, besides Brazil. Morocco have just conceded one goal, are unbeaten in this particular World Cup, topped their group, which no one expected them to do. And they've been on a run ever since this new coach came on, Walid Regragui. He replaced Vahid Varholzic, who had had a falling out with most of the squad. They had had a falling out with Karim Ziyech. The first thing the new coach did was integrate Ziyech, his most creative player, into the team. And I think you could see how much it's paying off. The first thing I love about Morocco is they're a proper tournament team. When you come into a tournament, and Americans always say this, but it holds true in soccer especially. When you talk to American football fans, they will tell you, offenses win you games, but defenses win you championships. And Morocco has perhaps the tightest defense in the entire tournament. They don't give away goals. They don't give away chances cheaply. You have to work for almost every inroad you make in this team. And they are protected by, for me, one of the most underrated players in this particular tournament. And that's Amrabat, Sofiane Amrabat. He's been a machine in that midfield. He covers loads of ground. He covers almost every blade of grass every time he plays. And then they have the outlet, you know, in Karim in Ziyech, in El Nesri. They have enough in Bofal. They have enough players who can also help them release the pressure when the ball is kicked upfield. But for me, I think the key to their success, and the key that's going to be, and what's going to remain key to their success going forward, is their defense. So long as you're playing a tournament and you don't concede, you always have the chance. Whether it goes into penalties or not, you always have a chance. You can sneak a goal, or maybe your rival, your opponent will make a mistake. So long as you keep it tight at the back, you always have a shot. And I feel like Morocco at least understood the assignment when it comes to that.
That's right. You got to keep it tight in a tournament like Greece 2004 Euros.
Exactly. Won almost every game 1-0 all the way to the final. And they won the final as well 1-0. Yeah. That was a proper tournament team. And I feel like almost Morocco is replicating that kind of form.
Absolutely. And I'd like to say, for the record, it is on tape. I did predict this outcome.
You did call it. And before
I get into Spain, I just want to say Morocco were absolutely fantastic. They executed the game plan to perfection. Stay compact. Let Spain have the ball. Spain had 77% of the ball to their 23%. They were passing it sideways and backward, rarely looked a threat. And they took to the game the penalties, and they won the game.
By the way, their coach took over just last August. So he's been with the team barely 3-4 months. But you can see that they buy into his philosophy. You can see the impact it's had on the team. And he's a former defender, so he understands how important defense is when you're playing tournament football. He hasn't lost a game. That's the most impressive thing, because he came on, played a bunch of friendlies, but he hasn't lost a game, even through the friendlies. So this run that he has, some people say, oh, this is a fairy tale Cinderella run. No, this is something that he has had in place ever since he took over. And it's going to be very, very interesting to watch Portugal try to break down this Moroccan team.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I totally agree with that. We'll get that into the quarterfinal in a sec. I just want to say a final thought on Spain. I think they're too rigid with their philosophy. You know, the blueprint to beat a tiki-taka side is pretty well documented, and they don't have the extra difference maker playing that style to make it work. They don't have a Messi, a Ronaldinho, you know, someone who for that matter, Xavi and Iniesta, you know, those types of players to kind of really execute it. So it's real easy for teams to sit back, wait for the chances, hit them on the break, or in a tournament, you know, play to penalties and win the game. And I think that they need to replace Luis Enrique with a new manager who's willing to play a more, keep the tiki-taka elements of having the ball, but also in moments, be prepared to be more direct when the situations offer themselves.
I feel like that's Luis Enrique's gift and curse. He's so stubborn.
Yeah.
And when he's wedded to a style, he's wedded to the style.
Right.
He won't switch it up just because maybe things are not going well. In this game, I felt like there was lots of toothless possession-based tick attacker just for the sake of possession.
Yeah.
At some point, you can pass the ball, but at some point you need that forward thrust. You need to stab. You can't just pass the ball, because then what the defense does is it just keeps its shape and keeps its structure, and they know you will never be able to go past them. So Spain, too much possession, but not enough of that killer instinct to actually make it count.
The final thing I'll say about Spain before we move on is that some of the older players like Busquets and maybe Jordi Alba, obviously.
This was their last World Cup,
This is probably their last World Cup. And even though I love the phenomenal talents of Pedri and Gavi, they sometimes struggle to compete with like bigger, stronger opponents, guys like Bellingham, Valverde, Tuameni, kind of more of the modern prototype of a modern day midfielder. So it's going to be interesting to see moving forward how they can combine with some of these young talents and maybe try to adapt to kind of a more physical modern game, because obviously the talent at Spain is there.
I think Spain is facing the same issue going into 2026 that the US is facing. They need to find a striker. And as you say, the way they play, the way the game in Spain is evolving, it almost feels like clubs no longer need strikers, because they play false nines and half nines, and they try to cram as many midfielders in every squad as they can. And so you can't see that they're being left behind. Spain used to produce some of the best strikers in the world, but you can't see, because of the evolution of football philosophy in Spain, and that was started by Pep Guardiola. It was started, of course, by Johan Cruyff, and then Pep Guardiola moved it and modernized it to the next level. You can't tell by that evolution that Spain is paying the price, because Spain doesn't have a striker at the same level as Harry Kane. Spain doesn't have a striker who you can count on to come and make a difference, because the league has evolved to become this midfielder-heavy league that almost always make strikers feel like second-class citizens.
Yeah, for sure. So here we go. We got one more matchup in the round of 16 in Portugal. Start Gonzalo Ramos in the place of Cristiano Ronaldo, who scores a hat-trick. And Portugal dominates Switzerland 6-1 and coasts into the quarterfinals. Did Gonzalo Ramos' brilliant performance earn him a starting nod in the quarterfinals?
Without a doubt. It was a gutsy, bold call. Almost risky call from the Portuguese manager. You don't ever bench your best player in such a critical game. But I think Ronaldo, despite everything he has done, brilliant career, one of the best players who've ever played the game. He had a stinker against South Korea in the last game, and I feel like that gave the coach enough justification to put him on the bench, because I always felt like, for all his gifts, he was holding Portugal back. Because Portugal is a very dynamic, fluid team, very cohesive unit. But when Ronaldo is playing, almost he's like a black hole, because almost every play has to be channeled through him. He's that big of a character. He's that big of an influence that all the players keep looking for him. It's almost the same problem that sometimes Barcelona used to have with Messi, or that Argentina has with Messi now. You try to channel every attacking play through your best player. And so when they took him off, again, gutsy call. I didn't think that Santos had it in him to make that call, but when it paid off, it took 17 minutes for it to pay off. Brilliant goal. He had no angle, Gonzalo Ramos.
Yeah.
But he somehow found a way past the goalkeeper, and then he later went on to score a hat-trick. Also, by the way, had an assist.
Yeah.
For me, probably the most complete performance by any player this World Cup. And I felt for the Swiss, and maybe they got bamboozled by the fact that Ronaldo didn't play. Because remember, all throughout the last 4 days, they have spent every training session preparing and strategizing for a Portugal team that had Ronaldo in it. Now, imagine their shock when they turned up
and he's not there.
And there was this player no one had ever heard of. Because remember, Gonzalo Ramos actually had, this was just his fourth cap. He's the least experienced player in the Portuguese team. So if they were going to bench Ronaldo, you expected maybe Andre Silva to come on. But Santos trumped and went for the least experienced player. It paid off. But I feel like Switzerland were bamboozled. Because the moment they crossed that white line, then their entire game plan went out of the window. Because the player they had been preparing for wasn't on the pitch. And then the player who was taking his place was a player no one knew anything about. So if you're a defender in that instance, you're going like, wow, no one told me about this guy in the strategy meeting. All of a sudden trying to go through your phone to find out what's this guy's strength. Is he left-footed or right-footed? Is he good in the air or not? What's like? So it almost like throws your entire game off. And I feel like Switzerland paid the price because they had organized and strategized for a different game than they ended up playing.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think Portugal looked really good, both with the ball and in transition. Like you said, very complete performance. It makes you think that they could go toe-to-toe with a Brazil or a France if they were to meet further in the tournament. Really, really impressive stuff. I think Spain should take notes about how to play a more modern brand of football.
It's a sad way to see Ronaldo go because you would have wanted him to have a primary role, to play a bigger, more prominent role at his World Cup. In fairness, he has carried this team all through the other World Cup, so maybe he's due a rest. But when I was watching the game, and with every goal that Gonzalo Ramos scored, you could see the chances of Ronaldo actually making it back into the starting 11 dwindle with each goal. Like the last goal, that was a goal scored by a player brimming with confidence. In a World Cup for a hat-trick, and he just dinked it over the goalkeeper. So for me, I feel like Portugal, prior to this, were facing the same problem that Manchester United has been dealing with. How do you build your team around a player whose age, which, by the way, is no fault of his because father time comes for us all, but a player whose age makes him a liability when you don't have the ball? Because Ronaldo can't track back the way, say, Gonzalo Ramos can. Ronaldo doesn't give you anything. He can't press the defenders because he has to conserve his energy. And he doesn't give you, because Messi doesn't do that all that, but Messi gives you something off the ball or when he has the ball. Right. Messi can create for other players. Ronaldo only contributes when he is scoring. And this World Cup, he has only scored one goal. It was off a dubious penalty against Ghana in the opening game. He has gone missing in all the other games. So, if a player is not contributing through the only avenue he can contribute, then he has to go on the bench, And then when you bring in a youngster like Gonzalo Ramos and he scores with the kind of ease that he did, yet he can also give you other things when he doesn't have the ball, when he's not scoring, he can defend, he can press, he can track back, then it becomes very hard for a player like Ronaldo to stay in the team. I think Erik ten Hag did the same when he brought in Martial and preferred Rashford and preferred even Elanga for Ronaldo. It was because of that. Elanga will defend, Rashford will track back, and Ronaldo, through no fault of his, he's, you know, it's the age. Father time comes for us all, and it's sad to see a player of such greatness also succumbing to father time. Because sometimes you watch players like Ronaldo and Messi, and you think, oh, they'll go on forever. But then this is the reminder that, yes, at the end of the day, father time, there's no running from him, however fast you are on the pitch.
Absolutely. As a Real Madrid fan, Cristiano Ronaldo has brought me a lot of joy in my life, and I appreciate all of that. But it's time for Gonzalo Ramos to take a more featured role. So this leads us to a prediction, a stout Morocco team, an organized Morocco team meet a really good-looking Portugal squad in a quarterfinal. Who do you have going through?
I have Portugal simply because they have the kind of tournament experience at this level that Morocco can only dream about. When you look at a player like Pepe, who was drafted in because Danilo broke his ribs, he wasn't supposed to be starting this game, but he not only start the game, but he was a rock in defense and then scored a towering header to put Portugal 2-0 up. A player like him has played in way more World Cups than Morocco, any of the Moroccan players has ever been in. And I feel like that's going to be critical. He plays alongside Ruben Dias, who plays big games week in, week out for Man City. And so I would give it to Portugal. Portugal were way too cohesive a unit today. They were so dynamic and so thrilling as a unit that it would be almost foolhardy to actually prefer Morocco to them. But as I said, Morocco doesn't concede. They don't score as well, but they don't concede. And you know what they're going to be doing? If they take it into halftime at 0-0, then Portugal will be facing the kinds of questions they didn't face against Switzerland.
For sure. For sure. I have Portugal going through as well, though I do think that Morocco has the ability to make it interesting. A few more questions before we go. Joe, who do you think your best player of the tournament has been to this day?
The best player of the tournament, I think Kylian Mbappe. Without a doubt, I'm a Messi fan, but Kylian Mbappe is having way too much fun. He's scoring goals for fun and he's scoring brilliant goals. He also plays in a really good French team, so maybe that takes a bit away from him. Olivier Giroud has also been contributing, but Mbappe has been unstoppable. Yeah. He has produced the way everyone expected him to produce. So without a doubt, I would go for him. Messi, a close second. And I say close second because Messi deals with the kind of attention from the opposition that Mbappe doesn't receive. So Messi, every time he receives the ball, he's swarmed by a battalion of opponents. Mbappe gets the ball. First of all, he plays on the wing, so he's always isolated against his wing back, which makes it easy. If Messi was always facing one-on-one, I think it would cause a lot more damage. But Messi always has like five players always rushing towards him every time he gets the ball. So Mbappe for me, but Messi a very, very, very close second.
So are we both sticking by our predictions that it's looking like a Brazil and France final, and that's what we're all looking forward to?
My heart, as I said, sees an Argentina-France final, but going by the results from the last round, I think Brazil are going to go past Croatia, which means they'll face Argentina in the semis, and I think they will have way too much for that Argentina team. I feel like Brazil has the solidity to actually neutralize Messi the entire game, and then they have the weapons to hurt that Argentine backline.
Needless to say, it will be an exciting round in the quarterfinals. There's so much to look forward to. Joe, it's been great breaking down the round of 16 with you.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Always a pleasure.
This has been the Daily Show recap of the World Cup. I'm George Guntas.
And I'm Joe Opio.
See you next time. For more on the World Cup, listen to Joe's full conversation with Grant Wall at dailyshow.com/beyond.
Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.